Good evening. Because Kathy said something to me first. I know that we have a public hearing first. Thank you, Kathy. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing concerning proposed local law number A of 2018, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2019. Are there any, is there anyone who would like to speak on that issue? All right. I will close the public hearing and call the meeting for July 3rd, 2018 of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler has asked to be excused. Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you very much. We have no proclamations tonight. So let's go to privilege of the floor for the public, Faye Gugakis. By signing this, Faye, you agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. Thank you. Hello, Faye.
My name is Faye Gugakis, and I live in the city of Ithaca, specifically on the Ithaca Commons. I just want to say for last time's meeting, I know I had some harsh words to say. I want to apologize for that, but I also want to say that it's really hard to speak the truth. So it comes out raw when you have 3 minutes. And that's... I've been in politics for a long time from the outside. I did run for common council in the mid-90s. I take politics extremely seriously. And my words were very hard, and I apologize for that. But I also, how's the word? I'm also, those concerns still matter. You know what I'm saying? They came out really harsh, and I'm sorry. That said, I hope George doesn't tell me again that this is not a county issue, but the letter that I wrote to the Ithaca Times, which thank you for letting me read it here, okay? I don't have time to read it probably at the council meeting, but I wanted it to go on record because when I came back from visiting my aunt in Pittsburgh recently, which from what I saw at the museum, I didn't have time because I was spending time with her because her health is not doing too good, and I haven't seen her in a couple years. At the museum, I did not see Lime bikes. I saw the other kind of bikes that are docked. Okay. So when I came back, I had to deal with another issue. I had to deal with carts on the commons being out there till 2 in the morning. So that's the latest affront that I have to deal with in my backyard because the city hired a noise ordinance person, and that was a couple years ago, Seth Murtock, and George could tell you about that, right? When Seth hired the noise ordinance person who the city paid $8,000 of taxpayers' money, and I bet he would not want carts out there till 2 in the morning because it is a crowd generator. So I got on the phone. George was one of the recipients of that call. And Duxton said to me, who I call my council person, and said, Faye, I want you to know that I called the Ithaca Times and spoke to Nick, the editor, and he said, you never submitted that letter to the Ithaca Times. Now think about that. I will not stand for my character to be demeaned because I submitted that letter. I spoke to one of the journalists. The letter was kindly typed by the secretary. That letter was submitted for the editor to turn around and tell my counsel person that I never submitted that. So I want you to please think about that because my letter still has not been published, and I don't feel that I have the support. I don't feel I could write a letter and reach out to the community other than this 3 minutes, which is why it's so important to me. So thank you. And we'll talk again in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much, Faye. I really appreciate what you said at the beginning.
Yeah, it was raw, and I'm sorry it came out that way.
Hey, we all say things we're sorry for. I just last night. Catch me.
Because that's what happens. And I just appreciate that you accept the apology and how it came out. So we're all human, right?
Absolutely. I think we always appreciate hearing from you, and especially in a good tone.
That letter was just... I knew what they were doing to me, and now we see what they've done. They've lied about my character, and that's very bad. Thank you.
Thank you, Faye. Enjoy the holiday. So did I see Duck here too? So Duck saw George was here, and he said, "Oh man, you got this." Hi, George. Welcome. Do you have a report for us?
Good evening. One thing they won last week was there was a food truck on the commons, not a generator, but they not. And that's against the rules. So they, that vendor was told he can't run that generator anymore.
Right, but he's there till 2 o'clock, and that's a 3-month pilot program. And Duxton just told me that everybody wants the carts there till 2. What's everybody?
We're going to talk more about it.
No, we're going to talk about it Thursday.
All
right. I don't have much to report. I did speak to the planning department about the Parks Master Plan and the possibility of them coming to talk with you. Megan Wilson, who was the primary staff person working on that, said that we voted on phase one of the Parks Master Plan, which really doesn't involve the county. When it gets to the governance, which is phase two, that's when issues that the county are concerned with will come to the fore, particularly for Stewart Park and Cass Park. But she's happy to come, probably not give a full-blown presentation, but an update. And she informed me that they came in November with some information at that point in time. So does that answer that concern?
Yeah, that'd be great, George. I think, the more information, the better. I mean,
absolutely.
We don't want to find out, at the end of the story. We'd love to hear about it.
Of course.
Yeah.
And one other thing you should know is that phase two didn't get funded in this year's budget, so it'll be a while before we get to that.
In the 2018 budget?
Yes.
Okay.
That's all I've got.
Thank you very much. Anybody got questions? Amanda.
West Hill's favorite topic. What's going on?
Oh, of course, I should have mentioned that. The construction of the West State Street redesign has begun. And what they're doing now is they're ripping up the sidewalk on the south side of the bridge over the flood control channel. And that that sidewalk's going to be significantly wider. So that's what they're working on right now. Unfortunately, to my mind, the new traffic light at the bottom of the hill isn't going to come in for several weeks. I think that would help sort things out during construction, but I'm sure there's a good reason for that. But yes, the construction has begun, and it's hard to get into town first thing in the morning because one eastbound lane is gone. But coming out, it's pretty much the same as it always was.
Go ahead. Have you had complaints or anybody talking to you?
You know, I've had a couple complaints, but a lot fewer than I thought I would have. No cross has been burned in my yard yet. But we'll see. You know, it's early days.
Mike Lane.
George, I brought this up one other time when you were here, and I appreciate it, but I'm still concerned about the bottom of the hill since the Simeon accident. And there was a committee. I was on it, as was the mayor, as was Barbara Lifton, brought in DOT folks. Then we got a federal highway study from Senator Schumer's efforts that was done down there. And I don't know what's going on with it, if anything. Is anybody looking at that? Is anybody talking about making implementing some of their recommendations on the State Street area down at the bottom of the hill? You know?
The only thing I'm aware of that has happened since then is signs have been placed to the east on Route 366 and on Route 79. For trucks to test their brakes.
Yep.
And I think there's a sign out by out in Dryden by the old NYSEG building that trucks are supposed to stay on Route 13.
You're exactly right. And all that stuff was done through New York State DOT. But what I'm talking about is the federal folks that came in and did the study. Because 79 is one of the highways that has federal designation in the county. And I don't know whether your traffic department, who would be the right people to talk to about this?
Tim Logue and Eric Hathaway and the superintendent of public works, Mike Thorne. I will ask that question.
Thank you.
Anna?
Just quick updates, bringing back to the construction that Amanda asked you the question. Do we have a sense of when that will be done and updated sense? Is it on target?
I can get more information on that. I don't think it's behind schedule. I'm assuming, and it is an assumption, but I'm assuming they want to get it done before public school starts in the fall because traffic, school bus traffic, if nothing else, increases incredibly through there when school's in session.
And the other one is the other entrance into the city, 79, on the other side of the city. Do we have a sense of when that is supposed to be done?
There's actually two projects going on. One is the city's project, which is a new sewer line. That's not supposed to be completed until fall. It's actually not that difficult to get through that part. NYSEG is doing a different project between where 366 veers up the hill and Giles Street. And I don't know what they're doing, and I don't know how long that's going to last.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Well, while you're here, George, I want to mention the good news from Brian Lilly, and I'm looking for it. I can't find it here, but specifically, George worked with Deborah and me about Spectrum and Charter Communications and the problem of WENY going off the air here. And we got word from Brian Lilly earlier this week that starting in, what did he say, October? September, they're going to have a local news station. They're going to
It's great news. And you guys worked hard. I want to thank you for that.
Well, it was team effort, absolutely. So we just wanted to mention it while you were here. This is really, really nice news. And as you pointed out in the email to back to Brian, that we're going to work on getting local businesses to know about it and to support the station.
Right.
So 24/7 local. It won't be like different news every hour. It'll be on a loop, I'm sure. But it'll be.
But they do cover
coverage.
Tompkins County a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do.
That'll be a real plus. I got to say, WHCU radio, all local, and you hear Cayuga County, you hear Onondaga County, you hear Hornell, and once in a while Tompkins County. So thank you for your help on that. It was really good to have you at the table working with them. With
I appreciate that. Fox is back. So that's 2 out of 3, but WSKG, we still got to fight for that.
Deborah.
Well, along those lines, we did put that petition out. Only 233 people signed it, which is fewer than the number of people who complained. So if you're out there and you haven't signed it, it's on my Facebook page, and it's on my regular, my legislative Facebook page and my regular Facebook page. Please sign it. I think it's the only way we're going to get SKG back.
Good point.
All right. Anything else for George? All right. Enjoy the fireworks. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
All right. Great. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Really?
Yeah. We have fireworks tonight.
We have fireworks. Okay. Well, it's a lot of time before dark. Mike Lane.
It's one of those odd years when the 4th of July falls on a Wednesday. And, you know, people don't really know what to do. They have the holiday off. They don't too many days to have Monday and Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday and Friday off for a lot of people. So they stay around home. And, you know, that's all right. Family picnics, a hike, going through our gorges, taking in some of the local things that are so much fun to do, buying the family ice cream. Those are all great things to do on the 4th of July. We've never had a big celebration in our region on the 4th of July, unlike Midwest and places in the South a lot that do that. But the individual things that we do mean a lot to people, and we should all take a minute to think about what the 4th of July is all about and the people who were Revolutionary War heroes who settled our area after the Revolutionary War. And it should give all of us a little bit of pause and while we're doing our celebrations. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mike.
What happens if it rains? Is there a rain day?
Looks pretty good out there right now. I don't know.
Tonight?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, stuff's happening. I guess it's Stewart Park, like, right now, and that's why everybody's there instead of here, I guess. Anybody else?
So Stewart and Cass are the viewing places. I think the fireworks goes off at Newman, Stewart and Park are the viewing places. If it does rain, the rain date is Thursday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslin. All right. Well, I just have a couple quick things from my report. I was going to mention Spectrum, WENY News. A couple of events in the county. It was good to have a lot of you there when Senator Gillibrand came here to town on Friday to talk about the prescription drug initiatives that she's put forth. That was great stuff. I mean, even with all the really dramatic stuff happening at the federal level, it's, you know, the sort of normal stuff has to keep going. So it was really good that she's paying attention to those issues. And this morning, yesterday morning, was a great event kicking off the construction of the Tompkins Center and Tompkins Center for History and Culture. And once again, thanks to Rich for all your work on that. Jason, you know, pulling pulling a lot of cats together, a lot of herding a lot of cats to make it happen. Arel and the facilities crew did the mitigation work very quickly and very well. And so the exhibit people have they're starting to work now, and it's a great opportunity. I think we're going to see something really special happen there. So, and I just want to say that I want to thank the many, many people who put their heart and soul into the primary election last week. You know, for about a year and a half, people have been running for Congress. And it's quite a testament to our community when we've got did we start out with 10 candidates? Is that what we, I think we had 10 and whittled that down. So there was just a great deal of interest and a lot of energy and a lot of smarts went into the campaign. It was a hard-fought campaign, and I think we'll hear an announcement soon about what's happened with the absentee ballots. Sean and I were among the folks counting today and yesterday in Tompkins County, and I want to just say, at the end of it this afternoon, we kind of said, so do other states do it like this? What do we know? Well, a lot of states have, maybe all you know this, but a lot of states have elected secretaries of state who, we haven't appointed secretary of state, or I think that's a title, but they don't do elections. We have this bipartisan structure. And the checks and balances are maybe time-consuming, maybe anal was a word that came to mind at some point, but it's a real protection. I've not done that before, participating in that process, but we really had such a good feeling about people working very hard to try to make sure every vote that could possibly be considered legal was counted and was counted correctly, and that everybody, both campaigns were treated fairly and honestly and transparently, very transparently. So it was a really interesting process, and you know, we will probably hear soon what the overall results have been. So thank you, Sean. It was good to be part of that with you. So thanks especially to our commissioners, Elizabeth Crea and Steve DeWitt, and Carrie, whose last name I don't know, but she was kind of the other person on the GOP side, and she was great. So that's my report. Any questions? Okay, Jason Molino, County Administrator.
Thank you. Two things to report, just to piggyback on what you discussed, the Tompkins Center for History and Culture, which is the name that it is called at the present time, is moving along. Abatement is taking place. That is a bid that you all awarded not too long ago. We are finalizing the leases to be sent out to the different parties to execute, and then I'll be working with Rick in preparation of the budget as to how we account for it in the budget. So everything is moving along, and hopefully, I would say in the next month, the MOU will be executed by all parties. The leases will hopefully be executed and returned, and we'll have a budget set for the proposed budget in September, and we'll be off and running. There are some more logistics. Arel has been a key player in this, and him and his staff have been very helpful trying to get some of the things off the ground. Another update is as of last Wednesday, some of you might be aware of a Supreme Court decision that came down, the Janus. Is that right? Janus decision. I won't get into the detail as to all of the intricacies of the decision. Essentially, it's a decision that impacts public employees in some states. Essentially, up until last Wednesday, in certain states, public employees that were had the option or were in a unionized environment that chose not to be in a union would be required to still pay agency fees, which was a different amount than union dues. And this was to avoid supporting political perspectives of the union. Those agency fees were generally less than the union dues. Those employees would still benefit from the negotiated benefits through the collective bargaining agreement, but would be considered separate to a certain extent. We have kept an ongoing list of who those agency fee members were. This decision essentially no longer required those folks that wanted to be, did not want to necessarily pay the union dues, no longer required them to pay agency fees. So they no longer have to be part of a union, even though generally the position may be in a union. That's the very basic understanding of it. There's a 30 or 40 page opinion of it, but and Jonathan, correct me if I got anything wrong on it. Essentially what that means, what we're doing right now is HR, Human Resources, Amy's working with Rick and his team to understand what that means from our perspective. We have to stop deductions for agency fee folks. There has to be some communication, and Amy's been communicating with the union leadership. What does it mean in the future? What are those members, how do those members, if they want to withdraw from the union, how does that work and how do they notify us? And basically the process and our involvement with it. So we're trying to still map that out, and probably will for the next week or two until we start to have an understanding of how we're going to, how it'll function in-house. And I would expect over the months to come, there'll probably be more clarity given at some point in time over the issue, if there's any unknown answers. But it's something we're conscious of, we're working with. I want to say there might have been around 60 to 70 folks that were agency fee folks in two unions. That would be white collar and blue collar. Patrol and corrections are a little different, but those are what we know of today. We'll have to confirm that, and then we'll move forward with how do we work, removing the deductions, agency fee deductions from their biweekly paycheck. So it's just to let you know that we're working on it, and we're communicating with the union leadership and the membership so that they know the steps they have to take in order to execute it.
Did you say 60?
I want to say between 60 and 70. That was roughly more. White collar is 400 plus. I think there might have been 40 or 50. Blue collar was maybe 15 or 20. And then, like I said, patrol and corrections are a little different. They didn't necessarily have an agency fee option at the time. So we're still trying to work through some of those details. That's a little different. But. Rick, do you have anything to add to that? Okay. John?
Mike Lane.
The agency fee got paid to the union for being their agent. Is that the idea? Or what happened to that money for those that paid the agency fees?
I could.
Please.
So it's sort of complicated, but dating back to a case called Abode, which is 1977. So public employees in certain states there were laws where they had to contribute to the union, whether they wanted to be union members or not. And that was to keep people from preloading with the unions. About 30 years ago, the Supreme Court said that's generally okay, except on First Amendment grounds, the money that unions are using to, endorse candidates that are purely political, that they go to, like, Albany and campaign for stuff, union members or non-union members can't be forced to pay those. So certain people in public who work in public, including here, said, okay, we don't want to be members of the union. They still had to pay agency's fees, which is still much of the union dues, but it's not the whole thing. So what Jason is talking about is those people. So there are some people who are not formally in the union, but they have to pay most of the union dues. Now they won't have to pay any of the union dues. And, of course, there are people who are currently in the union who may now decide that they don't want to be in the union.
But now that agency money goes to the union. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now you mean before the decision?
Before the decision they did. Yes.
Right, yeah.
Anna?
But so in this new scenario, though, the people who aren't paying those fees that you're describing will still benefit from the collective bargaining because of their job title. And that's an important – it's basically going back to what it was before that decision was made years, decades ago.
Technically.
When a union is chosen, they are the exclusive bargaining representative of all employees with those job titles, whether they're in the union or not. So essentially the union represents people who aren't in the union as well.
So my question is why?
Why?
Why does the union have to represent people who aren't in the union?
Well, it's sort of the way it works.
How late? Do you want to see the fireworks tonight or not?
To put it really simply, the way union works is that unions apply to be the exclusive bargaining representative for employees. And thus they, if they qualify by getting the proper votes, et cetera, then the NLRB or PERB or whatever unit is in charge designates them as the exclusive representative for those employees. As to whether people are in the union or not, that's sort of a separate issue, but the union petitions to be the representative of those employees.
Deborah, you want to add something?
I was just going to say the answer to your question is because the National Labor Relations Act says so.
Okay. Doesn't seem quite fair to me, but okay. Ann?
I just wanted to add that I've been in a union before. I've been a union rep and in a public union working for the state. And a lot of my family have been and are in unions, and I see this as a way of degrading unions.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason. Any other questions for Jason? Was that the end of your report?
That's all I have, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I meant to mention, go back to my report, meant to mention the piece of paper I put on your desks tonight. Just got notice of this letter from NYSEG, and we are, you know, we've been involved in the non-pipe alternatives with NYSEG in the moratorium area in Lansing. This letter indicates that basically the reason for the moratorium, which was this is from the NYSEG to the Department, to the Public Service Commission, that the reason for the moratorium that they felt they couldn't get enough pressure into the northern part of the town of Lansing on the coldest days in the winter, and that that's why they needed a pipeline through Dryden, that actually they've kind of figured out, no, they don't really need it. So, this past winter, acceptable pressures were maintained throughout the 2017-18 heating season, and there was not any material growth in demand. So they believe there's little risk associated with maintaining needed endpoint pressure during the upcoming heating season. So the proposal for four pressure boosters that would have been in the town of Lansing, Village of Cayuga Heights, and Village of Lansing, they're saying they've done some engineering. They expect the cost was going to go way up. They are asking the Department of Public Service, asking the Public Service Commission. The Department of Public Service is the staff to the commission. Okay, they're asking the commission for permission not to do the compressors, not to do the pressure boosters at all, but rather to focus on the responses they've got to the non-pipe alternatives, which were the idea there is to reduce demand, to switch users off gas onto other fuel sources and use efficiency, et cetera, to reduce the demand, so to free up pressure, free up supply to go to North Lansing. They would rather do that first and see if that works, see if that's sufficient, and not spend the money on the pressure boosters. So this is a win. This is a huge win. This is what we, for 2 years, have been asking them to do, is to reduce the need first, and then if they still need more supply, more pressure, then the pressure boosters are sort of a fallback position. So just got this today. I wanted you to know about it, and I'll make sure Mike sees it. So, Deborah.
Well, I want to clarify that it's not that they don't need a moratorium anymore. They're saying, in fact, that they don't need the pressure boosters to meet the reliability needs of the current customers. But that moratorium is still in place. And in terms of a countywide win on this, we really need to get to a place where we can approve new building in Lansing and know that people are going to be able to get power without putting propane tanks in their backyard.
That's right. And our argument for the RFP is that especially housing has been going up all over the county, you know, more units every single year on heat pumps without using gas. So what this is saying is that ratepayers aren't going to spend, I think the price tag was headed up to $7 or $8 million for these pressure boosters. Instead, perhaps that ratepayer money is going to go towards switching off of gas, greater efficiencies instead. So They had said that the moratorium was needed for, or the pipeline was needed for three levels of demand. Existing customers, and that's what the pressure boosters were for. New requests or expanded requests from existing customers. Somebody wants to expand or add a restaurant to their hotel. And then new growth. So what they're saying is that first level, they think they can do that without the pressure boosters. So just wanted you to know about it and wanted to explain it a little bit. Anything else? All right, thank you. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I, too, left pieces of paper on your desk. It's an update on litigation, so if anybody has any questions, please catch me and ask me. Other than that, I have no report.
Any questions? Thank you, Jonathan. Rick Snyder, County Finance Director.
I have an auction report for you tonight. It's part of your pack, and I'd ask you to turn to page 4. This is similar to the brief discussion we had at our last meeting, but we were able to finish the spreadsheet, which is on page 5, that details all the cost of the auction and all the revenues that came in. My short little memo briefly tells you how we did in the auction. There were 62 registered bidders with a peak attendance of 130 people. Last year, there were 40 registered bidders with 70 people. So with just 12 properties, which was one of our smallest auctions, we were able to attract a considerable number of our investors in the area who were looking at these properties. The auction proceeds spreadsheet can basically boil down into how much money came in altogether. That gross proceeds, including current taxes, was $366,259. After netting out all expenses, the county netted from the auction $231,655. That compares to a much smaller figure that we netted last year, which was only $88,000. Is this found money? Not really. We do budget an amount from auction proceeds as part of the budget process, but we're very conservative. In the current year budget, we budgeted about $104,000. So the net proceeds of $231,000 was significantly above what we budgeted for this year. This resolution that's on the previous page, on page 3, is part of your consent agenda. This is an annual resolution we bring forth every year. It basically says that you're signing off to transfer the final sales of these properties to the 12 individuals who bought the 12 properties that are listed in the resolution. So each year we come forward and ask the legislature to adopt this so that each and every property can be closed. All of the property owners have about a month to come, about 3 weeks to a month to come in since the auction to settle with my office for the payment of what they bid at the auction. And this is the final step that has to take place so that we can transfer the properties.
Okay.
And that's it. Oh, and the second little note is that we did finish the financial statements for Tompkins County about a week ago. I signed off on, I believe it was third or fourth draft of those financial statements, and they will be on as we scheduled for the July 10th budget committee meeting. This year, instead of having a small audit committee, we have the entire budget committee convening at 3 o'clock next Tuesday. And at that time, you'll hear the auditor's presentation of the highlights of fiscal year 2017. So all the financial reports are done. And if you want to come to the budget committee meeting and hear the auditors give a very exciting, mesmerizing, detailed report of the county finances, come next Tuesday at 3 o'clock p.m. The very following week, on Tuesday the 17th, the legislative body will be accepting the financial statements and passing a resolution to accept them. And you'll be getting all the same materials. And that's all I have for tonight.
Anna?
So the full presentation at the budget hearing, are we going to get a truncated version of that presentation at the following, the July 17th?
No, not from the auditor. The auditors will come and give probably about an hour presentation at the budget committee meeting next week. I'll be making a presentation which highlights a much abbreviated version of what the auditors just are saying. So you'll be getting the finance directors and county administrators' viewpoint of the financial statements at the legislative meeting on July 17th.
Thank you.
That'll be just as exciting, maybe even more so.
I'm waiting for that one.
So 62 registered bidders, that's 50% more than last year. That's a lot of interest in our property. So, all right, any questions? Any other questions for Rick?
I have a question.
Glenn.
Have you seen the prices that taxes owed compared to the selling price of it? There's one place in Lansing that was sold for $132,000, and there is only $34,000 of taxes. In Groton, there is a $2,500 tax bill and one for $17,000. Was it one bidder that did all these, and what rhyme or reason did they bump them up so high?
Well, we had a lot of slivers of property, very odd-shaped vacant properties. Most of them are the ones that had any buildings on at all were run down or falling down. So every property is in a completely different than the property next to it, because some you don't need to do any work. Some you have to do tons of work. Some are just vacant. Now, when we have so many bidders, you frequently have properties where you might have three or four or five neighbors that were next to it or contiguous to it, and they all want that property. And that's what brings the bidding wars. That's what brings the prices up higher than what you could ever expect, because you've got four or five interested property owners that want to make their property bigger because they're next to it. In other cases, like in the Lansing property that well, you mentioned, the purchase price of $132,000, and that's where we netted the most amount of money. That was a perfectly good house, a nice two-story house. It was overgrown with weeds, but it was a two-story dwelling that was relatively good shape. And that was the prime piece of part of the prime property that people were looking at. So some properties have lots of bidders and some not so many, but I don't think we've ever had a property yet, at least not since I've been here, that didn't sell, that we didn't have any bids, you know, that we couldn't sell at auction. So I believe that our auctions are very good. We don't have as many properties as a lot of other counties have. So we don't have to do the full expense of a lot of marketing and internet sales and all of that. We manage this in a very streamlined fashion, and we seem to get pretty good proceeds.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. Thanks very much, Rick. Do we have any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. I'm going to go through the consent agenda. Let me know if you have anything to pull off. Appointments, I'll start with Water Resources Council, Darby Kiley and Cynthia Brock. Environmental Management Council, Brian Eden. Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Kathleen Cutts. And Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Dooley Kiefer. For Resolution A, what Rick has just been talking about, authorization to execute quit claim deeds, sale of foreclosure properties at public auction, ID 7925. Resolution B, authorizing public hearing for local law number B of 2018, a local law to modify local law number 2 of 2015, a local law to establish a sustainable energy loan program in Tompkins County, ID 7916. Resolution C, request for Tompkins County to join the Economic Development District of the Southern Tier, ID 7919. Resolution D, award of contract. Okay. And Resolution E, award of bid, bridge replacement, Dodge Road over Cascadilla Creek, bin 32320989O, Town of Dryden, ID 7914. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Ann, seconded by Glenn. Any ready to vote? All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, I'm up first. We haven't met, but we'll be meeting here on Friday.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? All right. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. The Government Operations Committee will be meeting this coming Thursday, July 5th, 9:30, here in these chambers. We're going to be getting an update about the website, county's website, an update about the census process, and we're going to begin discussion about parking and mileage reimbursements for legislators.
Easy stuff.
Inside stuff.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions? All right. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality. Anna Kellis, Chair.
So we had a meeting last week, and I wanted to just point out to everyone what is in that agenda, if people are interested in it. There was a copy of the Tompkins County Outdoor Recreation Tourism Implementation Plan. There was also a presentation by the Cornell Cooperative Extension Agricultural Strategic Team. They presented their agricultural strategic program, and that is also in the packet for people to look at. We did ask TCAD to do more extensive reports each month, and this was the first report that it is more extensive, which everyone very much appreciated. It's quite dense compared to what it previously was, so I encourage people to look at that. The other thing, the last thing, is that we got a presentation from Ken Schlather about the EOM position that we funded, the management position that we funded last year to support his work. And essentially, in summary, what has happened is that they did hire someone early this year. That person was then offered a job by Cornell. And so they took that job after a month of working at CCE instead. So they temporarily have a consultant for the diversity and inclusion component, as well as a consultant, a temporary consultant for the management component. What he explained to us is that they would be doing a study, particularly the management person, to evaluate the extent of the needs with respect to management. And then the results of those studies would be used to create a more focused position that they would then hire for. So that has been prolonged or postponed, as it were. And that is the full summary of this month's meeting.
Thanks very much, Anna. Any questions? All right, great. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane.
We will be meeting on Tuesday, July 10th at 3 o'clock, as Rick told us and reminded us that we're doing an hour early so that we can do the we can form together as an audit committee to review the audit. We also hopefully will be hearing about the results of the survey on the direct reports so we can move that process along. And stay tuned. We'll have other things to do. I have one resolution tonight.
Okay.
Resolution F, adoption of local law number A of 2018, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2019. That's ID 7895, and I so move.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion? Jason, can I ask a...
Sure.
Question.
Well,
did you do this in Batavia?
No. Some communities preemptively pass the tax cap. It's not an uncommon practice, but it is also not, I would say less communities do it preemptively, but some communities do.
Okay. All right. We ready to vote? Do we have the roll call? Okay. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? One opposed. So that passes 12 to 1. Okay? Right? All right. Anything else, Mike?
No.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. WDIC met on June 27th. spent a good part of her time talking about. How we hear or get reports from departments and department heads on what they are doing relative to promoting, embracing, and ensuring diversity and inclusion within their departments. We had a little bit of information from some work Lisa Holmes and Jason did with the other departments, just doing a quick survey, and that discussion will continue. We're trying to figure out what's the best way as a county for all of us to hear from departments. What is that report out process? Is it at WDIC? Is it to this body? Is it to budget? So that we know what people are doing and know how we can best support that. We also have a little update on the climate survey, and for some strange reason, the date for the vendor to report those does not stick in my head, so help me out, whoever remembers. August something.
Kathy's saying August 2nd.
Thank you, Kathy. So we should be hearing from them. We had about a 70%, I think, return rate, and so they're getting all that information together, and we should hear from them shortly. The subcommittee that is working on particularly transgender issues, but LGBTQ and law enforcement interaction continues to meet, and more information to follow on that. And then we also had a discussion and brought to the committee, returned to the committee, the resolution to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day as a holiday in Tompkins County. Oh my gosh, I just blank. I can't remember if we moved this forward to budget.
Yes,
we did. Yes, all right. So this has been moved to budget. Would give us some time if we need to bring it back to committee and massage it some more. So that is the gist of where we are. Jennifer Tavares, actually, from the Chamber of Commerce, did come to our committee last year. WDIC and county administration helped to support trainings and workshops to help local businesses, women and minority-owned businesses, understand the process of becoming MBEW certified. And it is the Chamber's intention to continue to do that because it is quite a process, and we're trying to get more and more businesses certified that way. And so Jennifer gave us a brief report on how that went, and just also letting us know that they're looking forward to partnering with us again to continue offering the trainings and workshops and assistance, technical assistance to folks to help them achieve that designation. And that's my report. And WDIC will not meet in July, but we will meet again in August. If I missed anything, there are committee members sitting around here because my brain is fried.
Can
chime in.
Thank you, Leslie. Anna?
I had a question for the people, because I can't remember. The reason that we supported and put money into the chamber doing those trainings is because and was stimulated by the state requirement of 30% for minority and women-owned businesses. They have to be certified. It's a huge amount of paperwork. It's a lot that they have to prove and implement before they can get the certification. So having the support, they also do a lot of referrals. They're building a list of minority women-owned businesses that they can have on their page, because the state page has a tendency to be very out of date. And the one question I had for the group, and Leslie, did she say that the state is looking into also incorporating in LGBTQIA-owned businesses, or it's her interest?
It's her interest.
Okay.
And it's something actually that we had a conversation with the gentleman from the governor's office when the governor was here for the airport event, whose name, the gentleman's name I'm blanking on right now, I do apologize for that, who works particularly in MBE and WBE issues. We had a brief parking lot conversation with him. He was supposed to come back and have further conversation about how to move in the direction of LGBTQ plus certified as well. So Jennifer has taken that because that's her initiative to move in that direction. I'm hoping that the state will jump on board. But like Tompkins County, we're always setting the standard for what we should be doing.
Absolutely.
We bad like that.
Awesome. Thank you. Anne?
And I just also wanted to add that Jennifer Tavares was talking about one of the reasons to encourage small or local businesses to be certified is that then when we go out to contract or ask for bids, that we're keeping more of that money local. And she also mentioned that there's a loan program for women, small women-owned businesses that they have through the chamber, and that they haven't had applications for a couple of years. So hopefully she'll be coming forward and doing a presentation or figuring out how to get that word out.
Very good. Amanda.
This is on a different topic if we're done.
With WDIC?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I just got an email from Max Della Pia that Tracy Matrano won.
Yeah, I just was texting you all.
Yeah, I got that. I was kind of holding it off so people could concentrate on our business.
It sounds like,
yeah.
In the entire district? I mean, she won the district?
She won the district.
I would like to congratulate Tracy Matrano on her victory in the Democratic primary. Although the final results of the primary election will not be certified until at least Thursday, it's become clear that the absentee ballots did not break in our favor. I believe it is important to begin the work of uniting as a party as soon as possible. That is why I'm making this announcement this evening. I pledge to her my full support to ensure she defeats Tom Reed this fall, and there's a lot
somebody
more.
Somebody has to defeat him.
So, all right. Yeah, I was kind of holding that till we had to finish the rest of our business. But MWB, there's I actually learned that one of my cousins, this trip to Long Island last month, his business is actually helping to train businesses to helping municipalities to find businesses and helping businesses to learn how to apply. So I'll get that information to you because he might be a good resource.
Thank you.
You bet. Anything else, Anna?
If we're doing other topics right now, I just thought.
Are we done with WDIC? Okay.
I guess I am because. You know.
Okay.
I am done.
Thanks very much, Leslie. Yes, Anna.
I was just going to add that a correction on the bridge, this is probably for Amanda, is October, not the end of the summer for completion of the bridge going out to West Hill. Sorry. I just sent an email to confirm, and it's October, the estimate.
Okay. Great. Housing Committee, we have not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is Monday, July 16th. So, Public Safety Committee, Rich John.
As our regularly scheduled meeting would have been tomorrow, the Public Safety Committee met earlier today. We had a report from Lee Shurtleff from Emergency Response, particularly talking about the process of unifying a lot of different advisory groups into the what is the Emergency Response Oversight Committee and all the subcommittees that support it. They're moving forward with that, and it was a good report. We also heard from the sheriff and probation on stats there. It was a relatively short meeting because we then proceeded to have a joint meeting with the Health and Human Services Committee, where there was a general discussion about supervised injection facilities. No action was taken, just so you know. But it was a really good conversation on the subject and a good opportunity for people from a lot of different sides of that issue to express themselves. And more to come there. But it was, I think, a good thing that our two committees had a chance to consider the issue in a consolidated way.
Anybody else? Questions or comments for Rich? I was really appreciative of the joint meeting. I thought it was a good conversation. Really important to have a just sort of back and forth without anything on the table to vote on. So it's important to do that. So, okay, anything else? That's it for public safety. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thanks, Rich, for having that meeting on the safe injection facility. Thank you, Anna, for chairing that since I was at a perceived conflict of interest. Let's see here. We have not had an HHS meeting, but our next one coming up is Monday, July 9th at 4 p.m.
Thank you very much, Shauna. Any questions? All right. This is record time, guys. All right. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
I may have missed it, but didn't we pull D?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I'll move D, award of contract terminal cleaning services at the Catoctin's Regional Airport.
Seconded by Glenn. And
who pulled it and what's the question?
Deborah.
It's not a question directly related to this resolution, with which I have no problem whatsoever, but it's a related question about procedure. I gather from the way this is presented and from other resolutions that I've seen that the airport, even as an enterprise unit, has to follow bidding processes and has to get the legislature's approval to spend money, even though it's their money. So I was curious to know, and I guess this is really a question for Jonathan, is there an exception to that rule that would cover, for example, a net metering agreement with a solar provider or a joint grant proposal that would require the airport to purchase its power from a particular provider?
I did send you an email.
Oh, I didn't. But I think a lot of us would be interested in knowing, so.
So to begin with, I'm pretty sure that there is no contemplation of a remote net metering agreement. In terms of bidding gas or electric, I mean, the county bids gas and electric overall. What you are thinking about in terms of the particular agreement that the airport is contemplating, what I said is that would be a sole source agreement in the sense that, so sole source for people who don't know, you don't have to bid things which are sole source because there's only one possible source. And because what that proposal includes, no one else can do that. So if one's talking about strictly bidding, that would, in my view, be an exception to the bidding law on that particular thing. But if you look at today, the airport gets electricity. It is under the bid of the county. So our departments haven't bid separately. And the remote net metering agreement was also, both of these were bid by MEGA on behalf of many counties. And the airport, which actually has separate accounts from the rest of the county, do enjoy the benefits of the remote net metering on that.
Okay, so the exception that would be relevant to my concern is the sole source exception.
Right, on that particular issue that you were raising, yes.
Thank you.
So that said, you have no problem with a cleaning contract. Okay.
I just didn't know procedurally how to bring up this issue. So,
That would have been fine. You could have also just asked Jonathan under his report, I think, or I'm just as a piece of information.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
It could have gone to Dave under his report of the committee, but since it's really directly a legal issue, you could have absolutely. So just as a matter, you don't have to have our staff make a report on something to ask a question. You can, like we do with the city staff, if you got, you know, you want to ask Jason about the 20 hostas he planted yesterday, and from Batavia brought them here.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So, in other words, you don't have to wait for a report. You can have a conversation about any issue, you know, that's relevant to the job. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You.
Cool. Anything about Resolution D? Are we ready to vote? We got a second, right? Did I do that?
Yes.
Get moved in a second? Okay. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right.
Okay. In addition to those and other resolutions that were on the consent agenda and appointments, we also talked a little bit about the South Street Stabilization Project, which is waiting on information from both DEC and the Army Corps of Engineers, and then that can move forward according to Jeff Smith. And the Priest Road Bridge project is waiting on the historical evaluation. And as far as I know, we have not received that, and I have not heard anything more about that yet. The other thing that we discussed at some length was the Burns Road intersection project, and we decided to go ahead and fund the increased price of that, which is $724,675, through the highway fund balance.
You said Burns, you mean Coddington?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Burns and Coddington. And I believe that's probably going to budget tomorrow, right?
Yes, Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Yes.
Okay. And that's my report.
Okay. Mike Lane?
Just a comment, Dave. Folks in my district are really pleased that the highway department is paving as we speak. Well, maybe not this late, but North Road, which had gotten pretty bad over the winter and spring. And so just wanted to pass that on. It's really appreciated that the highway department is paying attention to that this year.
Did they pave that the extra width so that the lanes are wider and there's more shoulder?
I don't know. They only had half of it paved, and I haven't driven on it yet, so I wouldn't be surprised. I think that's what they've been doing to most of the roads.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else?
Thank you very much, Dave. All right, can I get a motion on the minutes of June 19th, 2018? Moved by Anna, seconded by Amanda. Amanda?
Yeah, so I had one comment or change on packet page 28 at the bottom, where Mr. Molino asked if the resolution is, I think it should say, is not adopted, that a meeting be convened with four legislators, two from each side.
This is about the TCAD resolution.
That's friendly.
Well, I think Jason.
Yes.
That's
correct.
True.
That's correct. Yeah, I said if it was not adopted, it convened before legislators. That's correct.
Okay. So there should be a not in there.
And that is friendly.
Sometimes a word makes a big difference. Amanda, you were seconder of the minutes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Anything else on the minutes? Ready to vote? All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, what time is it, guys?
6:38. A minute, oh no, an hour and 8 minutes.
Holy cow. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Henry. All in favor.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Happy holiday.